वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद्भागवतम Second Canto, Chapter 7, Text 27. Tokena Jiva Haranam Yad Uluki Kayas Trayi Mashikasya Cha Pada Shakato Apabrittaha Jad Ringatantara Gatena Divi Sprishor Va Unmulanam Tu Itarathar Junayor Na Bhavyam. Tokena Jiva Haranam Jaduluki Kayas. Traimashikasya cha pada shakato pavritya. Jadringatantaragatena divisprishorva Unmulanam titarathar junayor nabhavyam Tokena jiva haranam jadulukikayas Traimasikasya cha pada shakatopavritya Jadringatantaragatena divisprishorva Unmulanam titarathar junayor nabhavyam Tokena jiva haranam jadulukikayas Straimasikasya cha pada shakatopavritya Yadringatantaragatena divisprishorva Unmulanam titarathar junayor nabhavyam Tokena, by a child, jivaharanam, killing a living being, yat, one which, ulukikaya, assume the giant body of a demon, Traimasikasya, of one who is only 3 months old. Cha, also, pada, by the leg, shakata apavritya, turned over the cart. Yat, one who, ringata, while crawling, Antaragatena, being overtaken, Divi, high in the sky, Sprishaha, touching, Ba, either, Unmulanam, uprooting, Tu, but, Itaratha, anyone else than, Arjunayo,
of the two Arjuna trees,
Bhavyam, was not possible. Translation: there is no doubt about Lord Krishna's being the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, how was it possible for him to kill a giant demon like Putana when he was just on the lap of his mother? To overturn a cart with his leg when he was only 3 months old? To uproot a pair of Arjuna trees so high that they touched the sky when he was only crawling? All these activities are impossible for anyone other than the Lord Himself. Please repeat after me. There is no doubt about Lord Krishna's being the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, how was it possible for him to kill a giant demon like Putana when he was just on the lap of his mother? To overturn a cart with his leg when he was only 3 months old? To uproot a pair of Arjuna trees so high that they touched the sky when he was only crawling? All these activities are impossible for anyone other than the Lord Himself. Purport by Srila Prabhupada: one cannot manufacture a god by one's mental speculation or by numerical votes, as has become a practice for the less intelligent class of men. God is God eternally, and in ordinary living entity, and an ordinary living entity is eternally a part and parcel of God. God is one without a second, and the ordinary living entities are many without number. All such living entities are maintained by God Himself, and that is the verdict of the Vedic literature. When Krishna was on the lap of his mother, the demon Putana appeared before his mother and prayed to nurture the child on her lap. Mother Yashoda agreed, and the child was transformed onto the lap of Putana, who was in the garb of a respectable lady. Putana wanted to kill the child by smearing poison on the nipple of her breast. But when everything was complete, the Lord sucked her breast along with her very air of life. And the demon's gigantic body, said to be as long as 6 miles, fell down. But Lord Krishna did not need to expand himself to the length of the she-demon Putana, although he was quite competent to extend himself more than 6 miles long. In his Vamana incarnation, he posed himself as a dwarf Brahmana. But when he took possession of his land promised by Boli Maharaj, he expanded his footstep to the top of the universe, extending over thousands and millions of miles. So it was not very difficult for Krishna to perform a miracle by expanding his bodily feature. But he had no desire to do it because of his deep filial love for his mother, Yashoda. If Yashoda had seen Krishna in her lap extending 6 miles to cope with the she-demon Putana, then the natural filial love of Yashoda would have been hurt, because in that way Yashoda would have come to know that her so-called son Krishna was God Himself. And with the knowledge of the Godhead of Krishna, Yashoda Mai would have lost the temper of her love for Krishna as a natural mother. But as far as Lord Krishna is concerned, He is God always, either as a child on the lap of His mother or as the coverer of the universe, Vamanadeva. He does not require to become God by undergoing severe penances although some men think of becoming God in that way. By undergoing severe austerities and penances, one cannot become one or equal with God, but one can attain most of the godly qualities. A living being can attain godly qualities to a large extent, but he cannot become God, whereas Krishna, without undergoing any type of penance, is God always, either in the lap of his mother, or growing up, or at any stage of growth. So, at the age of only 3 months, he killed the Shakatasura, who had remained hidden behind a cart in the house of Yashoda Mai. And when he was crawling and was disturbing his mother from doing household affairs, the mother tied him with a grinding pestle. But the naughty child dragged the pestle up to a pear of very high Arjuna trees in the ear of Yashoda Mai. And when the pestle was stuck between the pair of trees, they fell down with a horrible sound. When Yashoda Mai came to see the happenings, she thought that her child had been saved from the falling trees by the mercy of the Lord, without knowing that the Lord himself is crawling in her yard, had wreaked the havoc. So that is the way of reciprocation of love affairs between the Lord and his devotees. Yashoda Mai wanted to have the Lord as a child and his devotees. Yashoda Mai wanted to have the Lord as a child, and the Lord played exactly like a child in her lap, but at the same time played the part of the Almighty Lord whenever it was so required. The beauty of such pastimes was that the Lord fulfilled everyone's desire. In the case of the falling of the gigantic Arjuna trees, the Lord's mission was to deliver the two sons of Kuvera, who were condemned to become trees by the curse of Narada, as well as to play like a crawling child in the ear of Yashoda, who took transcendental pleasure in seeing such activities of the Lord in the very yard of her home. The Lord, in any condition, is Lord of the universe, and he can act as such in any form, gigantic or small, as he likes. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Twam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaskute Tapto Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranam Mami Hari Priye Bancha Kalpatarubhascha Kripa Sindhu Bhai Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Tokena Jiva Haranam Jadulu Kikayas Traimasikas Sachapada Shakotopabritta Jad Ringatan Taragatena Divis Prishorba unmulanam ditaratharth arjunayor na bhavyam.
There is no doubt about Lord Krishna being the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, how is it possible for him to kill a giant demon like Putana when he was just on the lap of his mother to overturn a cart
with his leg when he was only 3 months old, to uproot a pair of Arjuna trees so high that they touched the sky when he was only crawling? All these activities are impossible for anyone other than the Lord himself.
So, in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, different scheduled incarnations of Krishna has been described. And in this one, in this particular, in these few verses, Krishna's own activities during his Vrindavan Leela, Vrindavan pastimes, are being described in order to establish that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, people do not have any understanding of God. And nowadays, people don't even believe in God. They think that everything came out of matter. Life came from matter. And this material nature is everything. And they don't have any notion, any understanding about the spiritual reality, spiritual sky. It is the unfortunate state of affairs in this age that due to some little scientific advancement, they are disregarding the existence of God. Man is able to explore a little bit into the nature, and they are able to make some arrangements to manipulate nature. And as a result of that, they are thinking that they have conquered the nature and they are the supreme, and there is no supreme beyond them. That is the problem of today's world or modern civilization. They think with the advancement of science, they are actually disregarding the existence of God. It's interesting to note that this atheistic attitude of the scientists is a rather recent development. The early scientists were not actually atheistic. Like we know that one of the greatest exponents of science, Sir Isaac Newton, was a theist. Used to believe in God. I remember when I was young, I read an article by Newton, where he compared himself to be a child playing on the shore of the ocean, collecting some pebbles. And he's saying that, I'm just collecting some pebbles, whereas the ocean is full of unlimited jewels and gems and the depth of the ocean. So his discoveries, his findings are just some very, very insignificant achievement as far as he himself was concerned. So this is how the early scientists were
were not atheistic. They were the believers of God. They were believers of God. They believed in God. And their effort actually was to probe into science, probe into the nature and find out why things happen in a certain way. They used to find out why. Like we know that incident in Isaac Newton's life. He was sitting on a bench in a park, and then he saw an apple falling. And he wondered, why does the apple fall? Why always the apples fall on the ground? Why doesn't some apple go up on this, fly out? It's quite a natural question. And that's how he actually discovered the theory of gravity, theory of gravitational pull. In this way, the early scientists were theists. They used to believe in God. They never defied God's existence. They knew that God is the supreme creator and he has arranged things in a certain way. And they just wanted to find out why things happen, why God's arrangement is like that. So early scientists were in search of knowledge. And it has been described that the trouble actually started when man invented, with the development of science, man invented a clock. A man invented a clock. And how does a clock work? They wind the clock and the clock functions. So those days, the invention of clock was a big thing. It was a big breakthrough. It was a major breakthrough in the scientific world. Like man invented clock. Like otherwise they couldn't measure time. They had various gross ways of measuring time through sundials and so forth. And also they had this sand particles falling through the glass, hourglass. So when they discovered that, the clock, then they started to compare their invention of clock to the arrangement of this nature. They developed a theory that just as you wind the clock and the clock begins to function, similarly God has winded the creation, and it is running by itself. God is not involved. In a way, it is true. God is not directly involved with the affairs of the material nature. He set up an autopilot of guna and karma. And due to the arrangement of guna and karma, everything is happening in this world. God is not directly involved in the affairs of this material nature. Jai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan ki jai. Jai Shri Shri Gaunitai ki jai. So they considered that God has, like a clockwork, has wound up the creation, and the creation is going on. Affairs of this material nature is going on without his being involved. And then, after some time, as the scientific development started to progress further, then they began to consider that, yes, God was there, but now he is dead. First, God was sent in exile. God is not there. He was there. He created. First step was, he created everything and he arranged everything, but now he is not involved. He set up, like a clockwork, he set up the affairs of this material nature in motion, and now he is gone. And then the next step was, now God is dead. And today's science is working with even further atheistic consideration that God is not only dead, God never existed. First God was dead and now he didn't exist at all. And actually we can't deny, we don't disregard the achievements of modern science. Yes, modern science has achieved a lot of things. But those little achievements do not give them the right to totally disregard the existence of God. It's like a little child, he gets a little freedom and he disregards his parents. My parents, I don't need them at all. But when he gets into trouble, then he says, Daddy, Daddy, where are you? So no matter how much, how atheistic today's world has become, when they're in crisis, then they look up to him, look towards him. When they're in trouble, then they cry out. And it is happening. Especially the Western world that was so atheistic, even a few years back, today is turning, they're seeing that they have got themselves into a terrible mess. They got themselves into a terrible mess and they don't know how to solve this problem. So now they're, people are actually becoming somewhat God conscious. They are thinking that yes, maybe someone is there who is the supreme creator, supreme maintainer and supreme controller. Actually, those who are intelligent, they will always accept the existence of God. It's not only a matter of intelligence, it's actually a matter of common sense. It's a matter of common sense. Like, if we consider, say this camera. Did someone make this camera? Or did the camera fall from the sky? If somebody says that there was a big bang and the camera appeared, will you accept it? If somebody comes and there was a soup cooking on the pot on fire, and from that soup this camera turned up, will you accept that? Will you accept that your watch came from nowhere? Will you accept that? Will you accept that the glasses that you're wearing, it just came out of accident? If I ask, did anybody make that? What will be your answer? Did somebody make your glasses? Yes. Did somebody make it or no? Yes. Did somebody make your shirt? Did somebody make your trousers? Did somebody make this building? Did somebody make this earth? Did somebody make this earth? How many of you think that nobody made this earth? Raise your hands. If somebody says that the earth was created out of a big explosion, will you accept it? Just as you can't accept that the camera came out of a primordial soup or a big bang, how can you expect that the creation came out of a big bang or a primordial soup? That's a big hoax. So it's a matter of common sense that everything must have a creator. Everything is created by somebody. Big or small, everything is created by somebody. Or should we accept a principle or a concept that small things are created by somebody but the big things are not? We may not know who the creator is, but we have to accept that somebody has created it. We have to accept that somebody is maintaining it. Out of accident, we never get order. Out of accident, we get chaos. Did you ever see that some order came out of accident? There's an American philosopher who gave an example that the concept that creation came out of accident is as absurd as saying that there was an explosion in a printing press and the way the types fell, Webster Dictionary was printed. That Webster Dictionary was printed. You get the point? Like, if there's an explosion in a printing press, what does a printing press do? Those days, early days, now of course things are computerized. But those days they used to, in the printing press, they would put the types, like the letters in lead, they would put one after another in order and then they would print the pages. Now, if somebody says that there was an explosion in a printing press and in that explosion the types went flying in all directions and when they fell in such an order that the Webster Dictionary got printed. Will anybody believe that? Now consider in this nature, do you ever see any discord? Do you see order or disorder in nature? Do you ever find that sun forgot to rise up at 6 o'clock and it came up at 12:30 at noon? Did it ever happen? Sometimes it happens. In Scandinavia it happens during the winter time. But even then it maintains a specific order. The sun comes at a specific time. There is no flaw in the movement of the sun. The moon rises at a certain time. The moon wanes and moon waxes in a specific order. Everything in nature is maintaining a beautiful order. The spring comes after winter, then comes summer after spring, then monsoon. So seasons are changing in a very specific way. Different types of fruits appear in different types of different seasons. Now when we see this order, should we conclude that these orders are coming out of accident? The order must be coming out of some very specific intelligent control. Now who is controlling all that? Is somebody controlling that? Now the question is, who is that person? We may not know him, but there must be a somebody who did it. Like for example, the watch that you are wearing. Like you know that somebody made it. You may not know who made it, but at least at the back of your mind you know that somebody made it. The watch couldn't have fell from the sky. Couldn't have fallen from the sky. Similarly, this creation, this entire creation, the entire universe, the entire material creation has been created by somebody. And it is being maintained by somebody. So that is an intelligent conclusion. And isn't it common sense? Isn't it common sense that somebody must have created? I may not know him, you may not know him, but he is there. So the intelligent thing is to accept that somebody has created. And if we want to know about him, the informations are available. Yes, if you want to know about him, you can get proper informations. about him. There are books like Srimad Bhagavatam is the book that is describing who he is. And this particular chapter is describing his various incarnations, how he comes to this material nature to fulfill certain objectives. And here is the description that how we have to accept that he is God, because there are three incidents that have been described here, mentioned here. One is when Krishna was on the lap of his mother, a terrible demon called Putana came to kill Krishna. Putana was a terrible witch who came, whose business was to kill newborn babies. And she was specifically ordered by Kamsa to kill all the demons, to kill all the children. Because Kamsa got to know that the eighth son of Vasudev has already been born and he is going to kill him. So Kamsa thought that if he can kill Krishna, then he can prevent himself from dying. So he thought that Kamsa's eighth child was born, and the forecast was already made at the time of Vasudev and Devaki's wedding that the eighth child of Devaki is going to kill Kamsa. So Kamsa wanted to kill Devaki at that time. But Vasudev told Kamsa, "Kamsa, why are you unnecessarily going to kill a woman? Because it's not proper to kill a woman. You lose all your pious activities. So why unnecessarily kill your sister Devaki? Rather, I'm promising you that whenever a child is born, I'll offer the child to you. Then you can do whatever you want to do. You can rather kill the child than kill this woman who happens to be your sister." So Kamsa agreed. And then as the children were born, one after another, Vasudev offered them to Kamsa, took them to Kamsa, and Kamsa killed them. In this way, one after another, six children were born, and Kamsa killed all six children. The seventh child was Balaram. And Balaram was transferred from Devaki's womb to Rohini's womb, another wife of Vasudev. And they thought that Devaki had a miscarriage. And then when the eighth child was to be born, Kamsa put Vasudev and Devaki in the prison to prevent the birth of the eighth child. He not only put them in prison after the seventh child was born and the seventh child was a miscarriage, they put them, Vasudev and Devaki, in the prison. And they were shackled so that they could not have any contact. But actually, from Devaki's heart, Krishna was transferred into, from Vasudev's heart, Krishna was transferred into Devaki's womb. And in this way, Krishna was conceived. And after Krishna was born, Krishna instructed Vasudev to transfer him to the house of Nanda Maharaj on the other side of the river Jamuna in Vraj, in Nandagram. So Vasudev did that, took the child and placed the child in the house of Nanda Maharaj. And at that time, Mother Jashoda also gave birth to a child, a daughter. And Vasudev returned with the daughter. When Kamsa got the news that the eighth child had been born, he rushed into the prison and He picked up the child and wanted to kill the child, although it was a baby girl, and he had nothing to worry about, nothing to be afraid of. But atheistic people are so afraid of their death, and the atheistic people are so concerned about preventing their death that they are prepared, they don't hesitate to commit any kind of sinful activity to do that. They become completely ruthless, completely cruel in order to protect their own interest. So he picked up the baby and tried to smash the baby on the stone and kill her. But the baby slipped out of her, of his hand, and went up in the sky and assumed her 10-armed Dasabhuja form. She was the Mahamaya, Durga. And she actually announced that, Kamsa, you can't kill me. How dare you? How can you kill me? You won't be able to kill me. But the one who is going to kill you has already taken birth. And he's growing. So then Kamsa decided, he didn't know where that baby was growing, so he decided to kill all the children born within 7 days' time. And Putana was assigned to execute that job. Putana was going, wherever a newborn baby was there, Putana was going and killing him. So Putana came to the house of Nanda Maharaj, disguised as a very beautiful woman. And she was so beautiful that although she was an unknown character, no one stopped her from going right inside the house. Many people thought that she must be the goddess of fortune herself, Lakshmi Devi. Came to see her husband, Narayan, who has just taken birth. So Lakshmi walked straight into the bedroom of Mother Yashoda, where she was tending her little boy, Krishna. Krishna was about 7 days old at that time. And so this lady came, and other ladies also were there. And this lady came and said, Putana came and said, "That's such a beautiful baby. Please let me have him on my lap." And because of her appearance, no one could suspect anything. So with simple faith, they offered the baby to her lap. And she took the baby, and she actually wanted to kill the baby. She came, smearing her nipples with the most deadly poison. And she offered her breast to Krishna. And Krishna also innocently accepted her breast. And as he started to suck her breast, Krishna sucked her life air. And Putana, out of pain, wanted to get rid of this child. But she could not. She was dying in pain. She ran out of the house. And Krishna also made it a point to take her to a certain distance, because her body was so large that if she fell in that area, in where everybody was, then many houses could have been damaged and many people could have died. So Krishna made her run for a long distance, and in this way finally Putana fell. And her original body became disclosed. And it has been described that her body was 6 miles long. Just the body was 6 miles long. Now somebody may say, how is it possible? Now these demons, they actually acquired their power through their yoga practice, called mystic power. They perform this yoga process, and by practicing this yoga process, they achieve their siddhi and they get the power. And so this yoga siddhi give them different, like one power is called gorima. There are different powers like anima, laghima, gorima, and prapti, ishita, vashita, kamavashita, prakamya, etc. In this way there are eight yoga siddhis. So one of the siddhis is that one can expand himself into a huge, gigantic form. So obviously these demons had that power. And also we cannot consider, we should not think that because we cannot do it, it is not possible. Like if you go to the ant society, if you go and tell the ant, if an ant is told that there are human beings who had a body so big, what will the ant think? The ant will think, you must be telling a fairy tale. How can anybody have a body so big? Compared to an ant, how big is the human body? So in this way, we have to understand that there are creatures beyond us who have their bodies, gigantic bodies like that. Anyway, so Krishna killed Putana when he was only 7 days old. When he was 3 months old, there was a festivity in the house of Nanda Maharaj and Krishna fell asleep. Mother Yashoda was busy doing various household chores and there was a festivity. So she was very, very busy. So she placed Krishna under a cart, thinking that under the cart Krishna will be safe. But actually a demon was hiding on that cart called Shakatasura and he wanted to kill Krishna. Krishna knew. So what Krishna did with his little feet, babies sometimes throw their feet. So Krishna just pushed the cart and the cart fell with all the commodities piled up on the cart. And just by being kicked by Krishna's small little feet, this demon was dead. And when they came out rushing, they heard the thundering sound of all kinds of utensils and things that were piled up on the cart falling with a thunderous noise. And they came out and found that the cart collapsed. And there was a huge demon. But Krishna was safe. Krishna was just lying there, kicking his little feet. Another time Krishna stole some butter. Actually, Krishna didn't steal the butter. Krishna was on Mother Yashoda's lap. And Mother Yashoda was breastfeeding Krishna. And Krishna was very happily drinking his mother's milk. And at that time Mother Yashoda realized that the pot of milk was boiling on the fire. So, and the milk was about to spill over. So she quickly dropped Krishna out of her lap on the floor and put Krishna on the floor and ran to take care of the milk, take the milk pot out of the fire. And Krishna thought, I was so happily drinking my mother's milk and look how my mother treated me. This milk that she was boiling is also for me. What was so important about the milk? The milk could have spilt over, so what? So Krishna became very angry. And out of his anger, he broke the pot of butter that was there. Then not only that, he climbed up onto the mortar and the things were hanging from rafters, the milk, the pot of butter and yogurt. And so Krishna took them, he ate the butter, and then he fed the monkeys, and then he broke the pots, scattered the room, scattered the butter and broken pots all over the room. When Mother Yashoda came back, she found that Krishna was not there, and all the butter has been smeared all over the room, scattered, broken pieces are scattered around the room. So she could suspect that it must be Krishna. And then she found that Krishna was hiding behind a pillar. So Krishna, Mother Yashoda, took the churning rod and chased after Krishna. And Krishna also ran. So finally Mother Yashoda caught Krishna. And she felt that this boy has become very naughty. He should be chastised. But then she saw that Krishna was so afraid, seeing the stick on her hand. So she felt that this boy should not be subjected to a fear, because that may affect his mental growth, psychological development. So she dropped that churning rod. But she at the same time thought that the boy must be taught some lesson. So she thought that she would tie up Krishna. So she got some rope to tie Krishna. But no matter how much she tried or how much rope she took, she found that the rope to be just 2 inches too short. She tied Krishna, tried to took the rope, and she went around Krishna's belly and tied him up with the mortar. But it was a little short, 2 inches too short. She got more rope, added those to the rope. Still it was 2 inches too short. And she got all the ropes in the house. And in the house, they're cowherd people, they have cows, so there was no dearth of ropes because there were so many cows. But still that ropes was not sufficient to tie Krishna up. Then finally Krishna felt that my mother is quite tired, exhausted, so I'll allow her to tie me up. So then finally Krishna allowed Mother Yashoda to tie him up. And when Mother Yashoda tied him up to the mortar, and she went back to the kitchen to take care of the household chores. So Krishna started to drag the mortar. She was tied to the mortar, so he started to move and the mortar fell. And he started to move. And as he started to move, dragging the mortar, at some point in the courtyard, there were 2 twin Arjun trees. And Krishna went through the Arjun tree and the mortar got stuck between those 2 trees. And Krishna naturally pulled, and as a result of his pulling, those 2 trees fell. And those 2 trees actually were 2 sons of Kuvera, known as Nala Kuver and Manigrihi. So they were cursed by Narad Muni that they would be born as trees. But when they begged forgiveness to Narad Muni, Narad Muni told them that when Krishna appears, then he'll be delivered. So that's why, that's the business that Krishna executed by delivering these 2 sons of Kuvera. But these 2 trees were so big, and when they fell with a thunderous sound. And hearing the sound, Mother Yashoda just came out, and she found that the tree just fell. And she found that her first thought was, what happened to Krishna? What happened to Krishna? And then she found that Krishna was safe between those 2 trees. When Nanda Maharaj came, he became very angry and started to chastise Yashoda. But why did you do something like that? What would have happened if the child was got crushed under the tree? Good that he has been saved, but what could have happened? So in this way, Krishna was performing his pastimes. He was acting in such a way just to give pleasure to his devotees. They didn't have any idea that Krishna is God. Krishna was simply playing like their own little son, but his activities were extraordinary. Although he appeared to be like a human child, but his activities were extraordinary. So in this way, Krishna, it has been pointed out that these activities display Krishna's identity, reveal Krishna's identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now the question may arise that it could have been that these are all fairy tales, some fairy tales, some stories. The response to that is that first of all, in Vedic scriptures there is no room for falsity or lie. All these Vedic scriptures are the truth and nothing but the truth. And if they were just some stories, why would such great personalities, since time immemorial, have accepted these stories as to be real? Like there are gigantic intellectual personalities, intellectual giants, like Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in the recent past, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. If they were just some stories, why they would accept the stories and lead their lives based on these stories? Like for example, you read some stories as a child, like the stories of Cinderella and the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Like you read those stories. But when you grew up, did you pay any heed to those stories? No, you left them behind. They were stories. But that's not the case with Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic scriptures. The greatest of the personalities have accepted them as true, and throughout their life they have pursued the teachings of these scriptures. If they were just some stories, they wouldn't have accepted it. So we have to understand that these happenings are not stories, but they're histories. They're history. And by accepting these as factual, we simply benefit ourselves. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premananda.